a story of love and intrigue and adventure. A story of castles and battles and lords and kings, of armor shining in the sun. But listen. Once upon a time, there was a town, and the name of this town was Mansoul. It was a beautiful place. Indeed, there was no other place under the heavens as wonderful as Mansoul. It had been built by the great King Shaddai for his delight and pleasure, and within its walls he had put everything good. There was no lack, no sorrow, no pain. Everything was perfect. In the very center, there was a most magnificent palace. The town itself was surrounded by walls, and there were gates, the ear gate, the eye gate, the mouth gate, the nose gate, and the field gate, and they could not be opened unless the people inside said so. There was only one law in this town, to love King Shaddai and to do his will. Now, it doesn't seem possible that anything terrible could happen to a town like this, but it did. Listen. There was a certain giant nearby, so terrible and powerful there was none like him anywhere at all. He lived in a pit where there was nothing but darkness and noise and yawning caverns. He had legions of soldiers at his command and underlords as terrible and ugly as he. His name was Diabolus. Now, Diabolus hated King Shaddai, hated him so much that he could think of nothing else, for he too had been made by the great king, not the ugly giant he was now, but a mighty prince full of brightness and glory. And because he had wanted more power and had started a rebellion to get it, he'd been banished into the miserable pit, he and his underlords with him. And so we have a great king, a wonderful town that he built for his pleasure, and a giant who hates him. And on these three things hangs a story of life and death. It all started when Diabolus decided to take this town for himself. For what sweeter revenge could he have than to take King Shaddai's most precious possession? He sat one day with his warlords in a private cavern, and as the distant blasts of fire lighted up their faces, they considered their course. "We would examine the town from every angle. It's impregnable." Diabolus was making little mounds of brimstone and flattening them out again as he spoke. "All our forces would not make a dent in any gate of Mansoul without their consent. My strategy is to make them want to let us in." And his warlords cried, "Want to let us in? Who want to let us in? Why, one look at us and..." "That is my strategy. They will not see us. We will be invisible, and they will not see our intentions either, for we will cloak them with lies and flattery. Only one of us will be visible. I suggest..." He stopped playing with the brimstone mounds and looked around the circle. "I suggest that I be that one." "Oh, by all means," they echoed, "for you are a genius at deceit, a master liar." "Yes, a master liar. I must go as something wise and beautiful, but something over which they have dominion, so they'll be completely disarmed. What do you think of something in the dragon family?" They sat in silence, thinking of the dragon slithering along with grace, shining in the sun. "Good, now that that's settled..." Diabolus left off his mound-making and sat up straight. "You, Apollyon, gather your accoutrements of warfare. Prepare to be in bowshot of the town, and have your sharpshooters coached to pick off any leaders who might give us trouble. You, Electo, appoint a scouting party of demons to go before us. And, oh, Apollyon, there's a certain captain who may give us a bit of trouble. He will undoubtedly be on the wall. His name is Resistance, Captain Resistance. Have one of your best men cover him." And so they went about their evil preparations until their strategy was foolproof. And when they were ready, they marched on Mansoul, and a terrible sight they were, or would have been if you could have seen them. But they were invisible except for Diabolus, and he was in the form of a dragon. They drew up to ear gate. The last minute instructions were given, and the trumpet was sounded for an audience. Officials arrived, all they saw was a dragon, and he was quite lovely. Mr. Innocency saw him first, and he thought, "Oh, what lovely colors." Milord Will was right behind him, and Milord Mayor Understanding, and Mr. Recorder, whose name was Conscience, and last of all, Captain Resistance. And Milord Will shouted, "Who are you? State your mission, please." And like a lamb, Diabolus began. His voice was oily. "I am a neighbor. I am also your humble servant, and it is because of my concern for you that I have come. I have come to show you how to obtain deliverance from the bondage you are in.
Ah, I can see the amazement in your faces. You were not aware that you were in bondage. You are not aware of what you are missing. Your king has forbidden you to eat the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Do you have that knowledge? No. The one thing he has forbidden you is the very thing that will do you the most good. He tells you if you eat that fruit, you will die. That is not quite true. You will not surely die. Your eyes will be opened. You will be like gods. So I repeat, his law is unjust. You are in bondage.
Captain Resistance stiffened. The sharpshooter drew his bow and... Oh! Captain Resistance tottered and pitched over the wall, quite dead. The officials were horrified, for the town was now without the courage or the heart to resist. Oh, my, said my Lord Mayor, understanding. He turned to Mr. Innocency. It would be nice to have knowledge and be... Mr. Innocency, what's the matter? Mr. Innocency! Mr. Innocency sank down in a fainting spell. They bent over him, slapped his wrists. It was too late. He was dead. Ah, said my Lord Mayor, that is sad. And sad it was, for Innocency and Resistance were the beauty and the glory of Mansoul, the two opponents Diabolus feared the most. Let's call a meeting, said my Lord Mayor. It will not hurt to consider what he says. And they did. They considered the fruit, and then they fell to and began to eat. As the moments flew by, Diabolus and his army waited every eye on the gates, and then...
The air gate! It's opening!
And even as they watched the eye gate open too, they broke ranks. It was hard to hold them. Wait! Ordered Diabolus. Do not destroy anything. I have other plans. Swarm in quietly. And in they marched, and the gates closed behind them. They marched right up to the main street and into the market square, and it was there that Diabolus faced the people of Mansoul who had gathered to see the one they thought was their deliverer. My poor Mansoul, I have done you this great service. I have set you at liberty, but alas, I have left you without a ruler, someone to defend you. For when King Shaddai hears of your rebellion, he will come storming in to snatch away that liberty. Now, if I were to become your ruler, I accept. It was as simple as that. Mansoul belonged to Diabolus, lock, stock, and barrel. The first thing Diabolus did was to take possession of the castle and make it his den, or headquarters. He put his important officers there, and the rest of the army scurried to the back streets and dug in. And then he got down to business. He gathered with his warlords in the castle, and they slouched or sat around the conference table. Diabolus took charge. The first thing we must do, my dear muckworms and runagates, is to remodel. Some officials are up and must come down. Some are down and must go up. Now, I know you have pet projects, my scrubby upstarts, but first things first, and the first remodeling job is my Lord Mayor understanding. Let's see, blueprints, where did I put the... Oh, yes, here they are. I submit these blueprints for a tower to be erected between Mayor Understanding's palace windows and the sun. Make his palace nice and dark, do you see? Yes, he sees too much. By limited liberties and living in darkness, he will be more useful to us. We can depend on him to confuse and distort. We can... What's that? Oh, yes, they can be more confused than they are already. A darkened understanding has limitless possibilities. Now, next, I would like... Burn my brimstone, he's at it again. That's what I was just coming to. My next project, Mr. Conscience. That rumbling is his voice. He is just... Come out from under the table, all of you! You are hand-picked whelps and mongrels, tried and false. What's the matter with you? Are you afraid of a little conscience? Get back in your chairs. There, that's better. Well, where was I? Oh, yes, it is not in my power to do away with Mr. Conscience. We must, unfortunately, put up with him. But Electo cried, but when he roars, sire, what'll we do when he roars? This is terrible. I'm secretary of this council, and I can't take notes. The table is shaking, so... Oh, yes, Electo. Well, we'll disperse for the moment. If you rogues will make the motions, we'll get a campaign underway to make old man Conscience look quite ridiculous. And with the proper tactics, we can convince the town that he is quite mad. Now, I have a plan up my sleeve. And they lost lost no time. First, the tower was built to keep Milord Mare understanding in darkness, and all propaganda getting to him was carefully mixed up, so he was quite helpless. And poor Mr. Conscience, they kept him so deluded that when he was merry, he did the very things he bellowed against. They spread the rumor that he was subject to fits, so when he was stricken with thoughts of Shaddai and raised his voice like thunder, it was easy to convince the townspeople it was just one of his bad days. And when he tried more mild reasoning, they said he was prattling. And when he got too troublesome, they lulled him to sleep, and he'd stay in a stupor for weeks at a time. The people of Mansoul learned to take him with their tongues in their cheeks. He bothered no one. And when he did disturb them, Diabolus would run to the rescue. "Hush, my Mansoul, Now, you are more content than you ever were. You know you are. You have no laws, no restraint. What more do you want? There, that's better. There. Now, don't let that rumbling disturb you." But though they nearly finished him, Mr. Conscience could never be put entirely out of the way. Now, as Diabolus had said, all the remodeling wasn't tearing down. Some of the changes that did him the most good were the officials he put in power. Milord Will was one. One day, Diabolus sent for him.
"I sent for you, Will, because you were one of the first chumps to be hoodwinked, or the first luminary to accept my counsel and advise opening your gate and letting me in. Also because you're a very headstrong man, and I have a great affection for you."
"Thank you, sire. May I speak frankly?"
"Oh, yes. Go right ahead." "Well, I have always been an important man in this town, and frankly, I don't want to be put in a subordinate position. I think I ought to rate a position of authority. A position of... Oh, but of course I'll give you a responsible position. I'll make you keeper of the gates. We'll put a clause in your contract. Nothing in Mansoul can be done without your consent. And we'll give you a secretary. Mr. Mind will be a good man for the job. Why, the whole town will have to kowtow to the whims of Will and Mind. How do you like that? You can be the big boss. Under my supervision, of course. You will be the biggest yes man, or fool, or statesman, that Mansoul has ever known." "Oh, thank you, sire. Then I'll be my own master. I am the master of my fate. Oh, thank you. Yes.
Yes, indeed. Some of the changes that did Diabolus the most good were the officials he put in power. His Excellency, Milord Mare Understanding, being temporarily disabled, it was necessary to appoint a new mayor. Lord Lustings was just the man. His platform was, "I want what I want when I want it." And as he had no eyes or ears, he could be depended upon to fall in line. They had to have a new recorder, too, while Mr. Conscience was under the weather. Mr. Forget-Good, just the man. He kept Mr. Conscience in a coma most of the time.
Ah, yes, put the right men in power, and everything else takes care of itself. Let's see, what have we here? Oh, the list of new aldermen and constables. Fine. I guess I can sign this. Mr. Haughty, Mr. Hardheart, Mr. Pitiless, Mr. Fury, Mr. Unbelief. Oh, they're surly chaps. They'll do very well. I guess I can... Okay, this... Yes, with these officers in power, things will go comfortably from bad to worse.
And things did go comfortably from bad to worse. The image of Shaddai was defaced, the laws of Shaddai were twisted, new forts were built and commanded by officers like Mr. Spike God, Mr. Love No Light. And when all was done, Diabolus went back to his castle to gloat. Indeed, he had plenty to gloat over. He had taken Mansoul, lock, stock, and barrel, and garrisoned himself inside, put down old officers, set up new ones, defaced the image of Shaddai, set up his own, spoiled old law books, promoted his own lies, made new magistrates, set up new aldermen, built new forts, and manned them.
"It's practically foolproof," said Diabolus. "I haven't left a loophole."
Whereupon he crouched uncomfortably in one of his favorite positions and dreamed him a dream of power and more power. And that's the way he was when the awful news reached him. What Diabolus had not known was that, even as the ear gate of Mansoul was opened on that fateful day, a messenger was on his way to the country of King Shaddai to tell him that Mansoul had fallen, yea, had delivered itself into enemy hands. And that even as Diabolus was remodeling, that same messenger was standing before the king and his son in open court, and the messenger's report was faithful, too. Item! That Diabolus had come upon Mansoul with lies and... Item! He had treacherously slain Captain Resistance as he stood upon the wall and...
Item! That brave Lord Innocency fell down dead with a sinking spell, some say with grief, and... Item! That Lord Will had turned traitor and pledged allegiance to the giant, and so on and on and on, all the rest of it. And the bad news, well, it jolted Diabolus right out of his favorite position. What did you say? He hissed at the messenger. That King Shaddai's son, the great Prince Emmanuel, had promised to take the punishment and pay the price for Mansoul's sin and restore Mansoul to his father, and that is not all, sire. Go on, we may as well hear it all. They have drawn up a record, the Bible, and it's to be published, and that's not all. Go on. Emmanuel intends to make war on you even now while you're still here and take the town and live in it. Diabolus flew into action. He pointed his finger in three directions at once. Get some posters printed. Get some posters giving the townspeople new liberties that will keep them busy for a while. Call for a vote of confidence. Parades, music, speeches. Get them stirred up. Send me Will. Send me Will. I'll handle him. He may be dangerous. I'll have to butter him up a bit and ask him to double his guard on here and I gate. And listen, if news does trickle in, twist it. Tell them Emmanuel is coming to destroy instead of to save. Tell them they'll lose their liberty. You've got to know how to handle these things with finesse. Tell them... No, wait. I'll tell them. Send me a ghostwriter to write me a speech. I'll address them in the market square. This is an emergency. And indeed it was. The warlords of Diabolus recognized that it was, and the people were called to the market square, and Diabolus delivered a speech, the finest piece of double talk that could be manufactured on such a short notice. And so to your arms. Up and to your arms. In my castle is armor that will make you invisible to the onslaught of the enemy. There is helmet, breastplate, sword, and shield, and whatnot to make you fight like men. First, my helmet. This helmet is the hope of getting by as you are. It has never failed to work. And now my breastplate. This is a breastplate of iron. It's a hard heart. Keep it on, and mercy won't win you, and judgment won't scare you. And now my sword, it's an evil tongue, wonderful for offensive warfare. And then, of course, my shield, it's unbelief. Use it to question the truth of the word. Don't think about it, dear. No, question it. The worst thing you can do is think. And last, a prayerless spirit. In order to use my armor, your attitude must be right. Scorn to cry for mercy. Where's your pride? Where's your self-respect? Where's the dignity of human nature and that spark of divinity in your soul? Mercy? Never! And besides all this, I have firebrands, arrows, and death, all good hand weapons. You'll be taught to use them in time. And in closing, remember that you are under oath to me. That is all. I declare Mansoul in a state of emergency. Now, all this was done none too soon, for already the first part of King Shaddai's great army was on the way. Four divisions sent ahead under four great captains. Captain Boanerges, the powerful orator. Captain Conviction, that great prover of guilt. Captain Judgment. And Captain Execution bringing up the rear. On they marched, colors flying, helmets gleaming in the sun. A beautiful sight to behold. 10,000, 20,000, 30,000, 40,000 strong on business for the king. People of Mansoul saw Shaddai's army coming in the distance, their glittering armor sparkling like jewels. And the people came out of their homes and called out to each other, and some stood on the city walls to see better such a beautiful army. Diabolus saw them too from his castle. He stared for a while through his field glasses, his face a horrible grimace. Four divisions. They look as if they meant business. Yes, they look good. They look too good. Diabolus began to ring for all of his staff at once. He pulled all the bell cords, pushed all the buzzers. Those fools might forget everything I ever taught them and let them in on impulse. They've got to be distracted, made to come off the city walls. Call them to the market square at once. We've got to work fast. Messengers were sent out both to get the people off the city walls and to summon them to the market square. Gentlemen, my beloved friends, began Diabolus, I cannot but scold you a little for your lack of caution. That display of glittering armor you've been gazing at is part of the very army that's been sent out to destroy you. Why have I put you through training to make you as hard as iron with hearts like millstones? To gaze at them? No, to resist them. Now let me see no more of such actions. Let not one of you so much as show his head over the wall without an order obtained by... Don't answer it.
Listen to what they want, but do not answer them.
And that's just what happened. Their mission was a failure. Again they tried, and again, no answer. The third time, Lord Will's head appeared over the wall.
Who are you? He cried. And why are you making such a hideous noise? And what do you want?
Boanerges stepped forward.
We come in the name of your former king, the great Shaddai. Will you turn back to him, or shall we take you by force? We'll deliver your message to our master, Diabolus. The message is not for Diabolus, it's for Mansoul. I'll deliver your message to the town, then.
Diabolus could keep quiet no longer.
My dear captain, you have summoned Mansoul to surrender to your king no less than four times. I don't know who gave you this authority, and I don't intend to dispute that now. I merely ask what you're up to, or don't you know?
Captain Boanerges ignored him as if he weren't there, and then one by one the other captains stood forth. Conviction told them of their guilt. Judgment and execution warned them of the consequences. Diabolus turned to his officers.
Give these runagates an answer. Speak out. Come on, you, Unbelief. You first.
And Unbelief stepped forward.
We do not believe you. We're not afraid of you. We defy you and your summons. Now get you gone before our weapons start flying from the city walls.
Good. You now will. Speak out.
Yes, that's right. All that he says. We prefer to remain as we are. We have answered your angry demands with mild and gentle words. Now take our kindness and be gone.
Townspeople took that for a signal to shout as though a great victory had been won. They rang bells. They even danced on the city walls. The war was on. The king's army was galvanized into action. The trumpets were blown, the banners waved, and from 40,000 men the battle cry went up, "Ye must be born again!" The townsmen answered with charge against charge. They threw new officers into the front lines. Mr. Puffup, Sergeant Prejudice, Captain Anything. With battering rams, with slings, with swords, the battle raged, but Irrigate could not be broken down. And the casualties began to mount. One good shot blasted a hole in the roof of Milord Understanding and let in some light. Lord Will was almost killed outright, but Irrigate held fast. The first great battle was over. The king's captains retreated. It was all over but the shouting. But nobody felt like shouting. Something had happened to Mansoul. Even though the townspeople were safe inside, they couldn't sleep. They tried to be merry again. We can do anything we want to, they told themselves. But the things they could do had somehow lost their appeal. And alarm flares kept going up from the camp of Shaddai's army. Captain Conviction took 10,000 men and marched around the walls all night, shouting the battle cry, "Ye must be born again!" Had a stimulating effect on old Mr. Conscience. He could not be drugged. He began to roar, and it shook the whole town. This was a war of nerves. No one could sleep. And then... a parley! The good news spread quickly over the town. Yes, they were going to talk peace. The officials were drawing up the terms under which they would surrender. The day was set. The crowds waited eagerly as Lord Will sounded the trumpet on the city wall.
These be our conditions of peace. We will submit to King Shaddai upon the following conditions. That our own officials still rule Mansoul. That no man serving under Diabolus be cast out. That we may still enjoy certain rights granted us under our master Diabolus. That no new law have power over us without our consent.
Boanerges stepped forward. His voice was like thunder.
O inhabitants of Mansoul, you have laid the stumbling block of your own iniquity before your own faces with your silly provisos and your foolish quibbling. In the name of my king, I refuse your conditions and demand unconditional surrender.
Old Unbelief stepped forward.
Unconditional surrender? No, no! Who would be so foolish as to take the staff out of his own hands and put it in the hands of someone who wants such complete submission?
He turned frantically to the Mansoulians.
If you listen to him, if you once yield, you are no longer your own. You will be giving yourselves up to an unlimited power. You will be complete...
And that did it. They were thrown into confusion past all hope of reaching an agreement.
Diabolus was delighted. He slapped old Unbelief on the back as they walked into the Chamber of State.
Oh, my faithful Unbelief, I shall one day make you my universal deputy. Yes, why not? How would you like that? Oh, I hear you even kept understanding and that old fool Conscience from being at the parley. Oh, you clever, clever. Here, have a cigar. Best imported brimstone. Here, take the whole box.
Mayor Unbelief left the Chamber of State, his head in the clouds with dreams of future power. So puffed up was he that he never saw the mob coming toward him until they were almost upon him. He opened his mouth to speak, and then saw that they were headed by Understanding and Conscience. He decided to run instead. He ran until he came to his own house, bolted the door, dashed up to the second floor, where he thought he could address them with a little more dignity from an upper window. He popped his head out.
What is the meaning of this hubbub? You have done a dangerous thing. You have kept Understanding and Conscience from the parley. You propounded peace terms that could never be accepted without making Shad-Eye a mere figurehead. You treason! Treason! Then call it treason if you like. We will fight!
They did. First words and then blows. Whoosh! Old Conscience was knocked down twice by Mr. Benumbing. But for a poor aim, Lord Understanding would have been killed. But it wasn't all one-sided. Whop! Mr. Mind beat the brains out of Mr. Rashhead. Mr. Prejudice was kicked about in the dirt. Mr. Anything wasn't popular anywhere because he'd never been true to anyone. He got one of his legs broken and he that did it wished it had been his neck. Oh, what a fight! What a futile, useless fight. For poor Mansoul, with all her good intentions, was no match for Diabolus. Confusion, that was his best weapon. Even after this awakening, they listened to him again. He threw Conscience and Understanding in prison, he made another speech full of double talk, and he reduced them all to simpering idiots. Irrigate remained closed. Mansoul could not stand up against Diabolus or resist his wiles. Their bravest efforts went down in defeat. Far away over the hills, another army was marching to the aid of the four captains outside the city walls, an army headed by none other than Prince Emmanuel himself, an army that was going to turn upside down Mansoul and everything in it, an army that couldn't be resisted. No, Mansoul was no match for Diabolus, but Prince Emmanuel was, and he was marching toward the town of Mansoul. When tidings reached the camp of the captains, a shout went up that rent the earth and made the mountains shake, and even old Diabolus himself did tremble. Emmanuel was coming with his five captains, Captain Faith, Good Hope, Charity, Innocent, and finally Captain Patience. And oh, how their trumpets sounded and their armor glittered and how their colors waved in the wind. The prince's armor was all of gold and it shone like the sun. The captain's armor was of proof and was like the glittering star. And they came prepared to fight. They had battering rams and slings and stones, all made of pure gold, to fling against the town of Mansoul. The town of Mansoul watched anxiously. They watched as Emmanuel's army surrounded them. They wondered at the flags and banners going up, a white flag on Mount Gracious offering mercy, other flags of judgment if that mercy was not accepted. And they were impressed. So impressed that none less than Diabolus himself appeared on the city wall to speak to Prince Emmanuel. He spoke in a low voice so Mansoul would not witness his humiliation. O thou great Emmanuel, lord of all the world, I know that thou art the son of the great King Shad-Eye, but why have you come here? This town is mine and you know it. I won it. Now go away and leave me in peace. This town is mine, mine by inheritance from my father, and twice mine by right of purchase. When Mansoul sinned against my father, I became security to my father, body for body and soul for soul, for I would pay for Mansoul's sins. And my father accepted that security. I bought my beloved Mansoul with my blood. Mansoul is mine. But I have no more to say to you. I have a word for Mansoul.
Not if I can help it, muttered Diabolus as he let himself down the back wall into town. He began to issue frantic orders for more barricades, more guards. I'll send someone to dicker with him. The biggest liar I can find. I'm the biggest liar in the universe. The next biggest liar then. And he did. He sent a messenger who was almost as good at lying as the old giant himself. When this messenger was admitted to see the prince, he lost no time but got right to the point. Great sir, that it may be known to all how great the prince my master is, he is willing, rather than to go to war, to deliver into your hands one half of the town of Mansoul. Mansoul is mine. I will not lose one half. Well, then, he will be content for you to be lord of all, and he will possess just a little part. Never. It is all mine. Well, if he could have just a private dwelling, perhaps he would never interfere. I'll not grant him the least corner. Well, all right, you win. All the town is yours, with this little proviso, that sometime when he comes into this country, just for old time's sake, he'd be entertained as an old friend, just for a few days at a time, of course. Now, this is a small matter. Surely you cannot refuse to grant it. I do refuse. You're a hard man, sire. Suppose my master yields to everything you say, provided that some of his relatives may have liberty to trade here and enjoy their present homes. A little business, perhaps. You can't refuse that.
I do refuse that. Every Diabolonian must lose his land and his liberty.
Ah, me. Just letters? You know, maintain old friendships? No? Postcards? No? An occasional token of his love?
I shall not consent that there be one scrap, one gift left behind by Diabolus.
The messenger began to pull on his gloves, adjust his cape for departure, and then he turned and spoke.
I've one thing more, and then I'll go. Suppose that sometime someone in Mansoul has business that must be done in a certain way, or it will fail. And suppose, sire, that nobody could help but my lord. He could be sent for, perhaps.
They will have no business, no problems that cannot be solved by my father. By prayer, by supplication, they will make their requests known to him.
Well, you are, I repeat, a hard man. I'll take your answer back to my master.
And so he departed.
Now, the battle that followed was terrible to see. Huge slings whirled stones into the town. Every gate trembled under the fierce assault. Diabolus sent frantic messages in his last-ditch stand.
Make me your deputy. I'll make them reform. Look, I'll set up a ministry, lectures once a week. I'll be an angel of light. Twice a week!
I have not come to deliver man's soul by works. I've come that they might be reconciled to my father. I've paid a price to buy them back. And so the battle raged until...
Ear gate is broken open!
The cry went through the town. People scrambled up and down the streets heading for their homes. Their champion, Diabolus, made straight for his castle and was busy there with his warlords barricading the doors and windows. The town shook now, but not with battering rams, with shouts of victory. Emmanuel and his captains marched right up to the center of town to Mr. Conscience's house, up to his gates, and... Whop! Hit them with a battering ram, and Mr. Conscience's whole house trembled and tottered. And whop! Went the battering ram again. Mr. Conscience, with trembling hands, opened the gate. And the rest, just mopping up operations. Milord Will and Milord Understanding and Conscience were taken prisoners from the home of Mr. Conscience. It was an easy matter to besiege the castle. The great Diabolus was hauled out, shrinking and cringing, taken to the market square, and there, before all the people, he was stripped of his armor. And as it dropped to the ground, and the people saw Diabolus as he really was, they could only stare at the ground in dumb misery and shame. And as the cringing Diabolus was led out of town, tied to the chariot of Emmanuel, they watched him go in silence. From the city walls, they could see him turned loose, way out there, turned loose to wander, and they saw Emmanuel retire to his camp. They waited. He did not come back. Now their only thought was of their own unworthiness. They saw themselves for the first time rebellious, traitors, deserving death. They knew whatever Emmanuel chose to do with them was right and just. And it was then that, awakened at last, they cried out to the Golden Prince to have mercy on them. Oh, that wonderful and fearful day when Prince Emmanuel sent word that he would give them his answer. They dressed in mourning, conscience, will, understanding, and prepared to go. What a sad procession they made. Captain Boanerges in front, the three drooping prisoners in the middle, and Captain Conviction bringing up the rear. When they were led before him, they could not stand. They had to be helped to their feet. His burning look demanded nothing less than complete honesty. "You are the men who used to be the servants of my father." "Yes, Lord." "And you suffered yourselves to be turned aside by Diabolus?" "We did more than suffer it, sire. We chose him." "You were content under his rule?" "Well, yes, his ways were pleasant. We did not know that we were in bondage." "And you did not want me to get the victory over you?" "No. No, Lord, we did not." "What punishment do you think you deserve at my hands?" "We can say nothing, Lord. Thou art just." "Here, then, is my judgment. Because I have paid the debt of your sin to my father, I have power from him to pardon you. And I do pardon you. I pardon you and forgive you completely." Oh, the glory of it, the wonder of it, was so great they could not stand. They fell at his feet and worshipped. They cried out, "Blessed be the glory of Emmanuel." And the rest was like a dream. They were stripped of their mourning clothes and given garments of praise and chains of gold and precious jewels. They were given a pardon to reach the town of Mansoul. And thus they were sent on their way, saved and pardoned, escorted back with flying colors by Captain Faith and his officers. The dickering, the bargaining, the resisting were over. Mansoul had faced up to the facts at last. Mansoul was saved. Oh, what a day it was. The market square was crowded. Mr. Conscience read the pardon. The trumpets were sounded. The colors hoisted up. And then the people cleared the center of the market square and the new army of the prince displayed drills and feats of war. And the drills ended in a mighty parade down the main street. Trumpets blowing, colors high, out of the town to the camp of the prince to beg him to be their king and come and live in the town of Mansoul. "We have room for thee," they cried, "and thy laws shall be our directions." And so he came, clad in his golden armor, riding in his golden chariot, up the main street, strewn with flowers, lined with people, up to the beautiful castle where he was welcomed by Captain Faith. Prince Emmanuel had come home.
It's time to turn the tape over.